My name is Chris Main. I'm with Mr. H.J.F. Rose, R-O-S-E. We're in Victoria. Date is June 6, 1978. And the hum on the tape is a machine outside, a crane, I believe. And we're down in the Bentall Building, Canada Life Assurance Company.
If anything, great, it's a machine on the construction of the new Royal Bank building.
Mr. Rose, I was wondering if you could start off by telling us a little bit about your family background, where you were born, when you were born, that type of thing, where?
Well, I was born in Oshawa before the First War. I remember going over to England during the First War with my mother while my father was overseas. I came back to Victoria and after the war was over, and I was brought up in Oak Bay. Basically, my home has been here ever since. I was in the bank for 30 years, and naturally, I was moved around a bit. 20 years ago, I left the bank and joined the Canada Life, and been living here ever since. And I'm very glad to have been here all the time.
Now, you say you went overseas during the First War. Do you remember anything about that at all, or any recollections at all?
Yes, I remember seeing Zeppelins being shot down. I remember troops coming off troop trains at the main London stations covered in mud. It wasn't a very happy time, naturally, but I was pretty young at the time.
But how old were you?
Well, around 8 at the end of the war, 7 or 8.
You saw Zeppelins come down in flames. Yeah. What was that like?
Well, just like a big cigar breaking in the middle in flames.
Just coming down. You see, your father was in the military overseas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was his regiment?
Well, he was in the Army Service Corps.
In the Army Service Corps.
After he got his commission, he went out to Mesopotamia, Middle East.
But you didn't follow?
Oh, no, we were just staying with our relatives in England. And so.
And you came back here to Oak Bay, and you lived in Oak Bay. You attended school here?
Again. Yes.
What school was that?
Monterey and Oak Bay High.
Oak Bay High. And did you go to college at all?
No.
And you go to college?
No, I joined the bank right out of high school.
Right out of high school. Which bank would this be?
Montreal.
Bank of Montreal?
Yeah.
Would it be a training, managerial training program? Or
no,
another?
This is totally different in those days. don't forget, that's nearly 50 years ago. Very close to 50 years ago. You joined and you worked for $400 a year, not $400 a week. And you started from the bottom and you just plugged at it.
Kept going at it. This was in Oak Bay itself, or were you?
No, I was started at the main office in Victoria and then I was moved all over southern BC.
Okay. So were you still with Bank of Montreal when war broke out?
Yes. I enlisted from the Chilliwack branch. Came down here and joined my old militia unit on the 14th of September, 39. They were manning Fort Macaulay as an examination battery, and I was there until June of 42.
June of 42, what militia was this?
5th BC Coast Brigade.
5th BC Coast Brigade militia. Was this militia unit activated at the start of the war?
In August of 39.
August 39.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. What was your rank
then? I started as a gunner, which is the equivalent of a private in the infantry. I got my commission in 1940, the end of 40, and I went overseas as a captain.
Went overseas as a captain?
Mm-hmm.
Commission in 40. What was the conditions like when you joined your militia unit? Did you have proper uniforms, facilities, things like that?
No.
Touch and go.
Well, it was in uniform, but they were antiquated as all get out. It was quite some time before we got anything up to date in the way of uniform.
These would be First World War uniforms and living things.
Basically,
like that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My first night was spent in a bell tent on a straw palliasse with a fellow who'd just been released from Ocala with two of us by ourselves.
Ocala Penitentiary.
Yeah.
What was your early training then with your militia unit? the war started, you've gone active. What did you do, route marches or?
No, we were manning the guns on the examination battery.
You were
first defenses.
Okay, well, you're losing me here now. I don't understand. Where is the examination battery then?
Well, every ship that, or boat, which came into harbor, wanted to come into harbor, had to submit itself to examination by an unarmed naval vessel.
Right.
According to international law. But to give that examining vessel some authority and backup, we had examination batteries on shore to whom they could signal if they needed support and help.
Now, would this be out of, like, Broad Hill area, or...?
No, it was Macaulay and Mary Hill.
Right
behind William Head. There were two examination batteries, two examination ships, one at each place.
And what type of guns did you have there?
Six-inch. 100-pound shells.
And you would be stationed with this until 1942?
Mm-hmm.
What did you do for entertainment during this time here in Victoria? What was Victoria like in the early part of the war? Was there any significant difference at all?
Not really. No. No blackouts.
No blackouts. Movies.
No, the movies were going. Everything was going.
Everything was going. No problems at all.
Except that there were too many men in services here with the Navy and the Army, and later on the Air Force out at Pat Bay, training establishment.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, everything was going on much the same as before, except things were getting shorter, and there was gas rationing, and so on and so forth. Tires were difficult to get, and so on.
Other than this few specific commodities, things weren't that
difficult? Up to the time I left here, no.
In 1942. What was the civilian-military relations like at this point? Very cordial, or standoffish?
No, they weren't standoffish. No, they're quite amenable, very happy relationship, basically.
Good. Did you particularly have any specific ambitions or goals to fulfill in the military at this stage? Did you see yourself rising to the top?
Nope. I just wanted to do my bit and either get back in one piece or stay over there in a grave somewhere. I didn't want to be crippled.
You're concerned not to come back crippled. Did you anticipate going back to the bank immediately, or?
Oh, well, I took off 3 months before I went back to the bank.
During your early training, how did you personally react to discipline?
Oh, I'd been used to it anyway. My father was a disciplinarian to start with. The bank was pretty strict.
So you fit right in on the discipline.
I'd had previous training in the militia anyway.
Did that help you out very much?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Stood you good stead?
Oh, certainly.
I
joined my old unit, you see, my old battery.
Wasn't hurt at all. Now, your specialty now was, you later became observation officer overseas. What was your specialty here in Victoria?
Up in the observation post in the battery here.
You were in observation in the battery here?
Well, I wasn't I was what they call a BCAC, a battery commander's assistant. The calculations of atmospheric corrections for atmospheric conditions and so on. I was in charge of the observation post at Fort Macaulay all the time.
Very good. Your training that you received here, how effective was it for overseas? You know, I know it's easy to second guess and look back, but how effective was it? Was it good training? Was it adequate training? Was it poor? Was it indifferent?
Well, I found that it was great help. It was a little bit different in the different application of the training I had here, because we were using field guns, medium field guns, whereas here we were using fixed mounted guns on fixed mountings.
Was there... ammunition,
where?
Here in town. Do you recall anything on that?
Well, we never went into action to start with.
Went into action. Have any humorous incidents?
All kinds of them. The
any mind?
One Saturday afternoon, the Barron's, which was a lighthouse tender, the Department of Transport or Coast Guard or whatever it happened to be then, was coming back from the Trial Island area and headed in to Victoria, coming between the breakwater and Brochey Ledge, which was a closed area. And we tried to stop her with the examination gun, fired a round to her starboard side. We never saw the round land at all. It went into the cliffs at Beacon Hill Park. So then the battery commander asked me what I would do, and I said, well, I'd put one right over the top of her. Maybe she'd hear it go over, which we did, but we took the top 2 feet off the mast. So there was a battle going on between the artillery and the, the Coast Guard.
Was there any, how should I put it, bad feeling after this episode, or was it all taken in good fun? Or?
Well, fortunately, I wasn't high enough in in rank to be involved.
You didn't have to do any answering for that particular episode. You were assigned to go overseas. Did you apply to go from overseas, or did you, or what was the procedure on your going overseas?
Well, I was active service anyway, active force. I can't remember whether I specifically volunteered or. It might be that I'd volunteered to go over with a light ACAC battery. It was going to be commanded by the major who'd been at Fort Macaulay. I'd known for since 1927. I can't remember exactly, but
you mentioned a major. You don't remember his name?
Oh yes, yeah, certainly Bob Phipps.
Bob Phipps. You two chum together, or what?
Well, he was in the Royal Trust, got up to be the manager of the Royal Trust, but he was able to stay in the militia. I had to give it up because I transferred around. And he was the officer in charge of the battery. I rejoined at the beginning of the war.
When you went overseas, did you train across to Halifax, or how was what was your impression then? You'd done some traveling. You'd been to Europe and that.
Well, that was just as a child.
Yeah, as a young child. What was your impression of Canada at that time?
Big.
Did you go straight through to Halifax?
No.
On the train?
Petawawa.
You went to Petawawa first?
And then back. Then from there on.
Went from Petawawa on?
Right onto the ship.
What was Petawawa like at the time? Any recollection?
Hot and sandy.
You wouldn't want to be stationed there?
No. This was in June of 42 that we left there. It was hot then.
And then you went straight from on the train from Petawawa straight down to Halifax.
Got right on the Empress of Japan.
Got on the Empress of Japan and joined a convoy?
It was a small convoy. There was only the Empress of Japan and the Letitia, three destroyers, an armed merchantman, and a pocket aircraft carrier. That's all there was in the convoy.
Up to Garrick, Scotland, or where?
Garrick, yes.
Garrick, Scotland. What was your impression of wartime England at this point?
Poor sods.
I guess it must have been quite a change from Victoria, the
Lifestyle. Well, of course, I'd been, could expect it and anticipate the living conditions over there.
Well, you'd seen it the first war, of course.
Yeah.
Is there any incidents over on the ship at all that come to mind? Or?
Not that I'm willing to
put on tape.
All I can say is that the Atlantic Ocean was as flat as this desk of mine. We had one alert apparently during the day, in the middle of the day. All the ships made a 180-degree turn at full speed, and the pocket aircraft carrier was so close to our stern that I could have thrown a tennis ball from the stern onto their bow.
You don't remember the name of that aircraft carrier?
Yeah. It was about the first one that they were using.
So it was a Canadian ship?
I couldn't tell you whether it was a Canadian or what it was. It was a smallish freighter that they put a flat deck on the top of it. It was convert it to an aircraft carrier to carry five biplanes for patrolling. We left with five, and by the time we got to Scotland, there was one left, I think. One that's serviceable. One was lost off Newfoundland. A heavy fog came up while the pilot was up. Couldn't find the ship, wouldn't be able to find the ship, or didn't find the ship. He didn't have enough gas to get to land. One crashed against the conning tower, another one went over the side, and another one just crashed. That left one serviceable flying when we got across there.
What was your living conditions like, or living quarters on the ship itself? As an officer, I guess you'd have better quarters?
We had better quarters, yes. We had what had been a fairly large cabin with bunks on it. And matter of fact, I had a small cabin, and I think there were three of us in this cabin, including an MO, regimental MO was with us. If an emergency, he had to get out first. But there were only three of us in this small cabin.
It wasn't all that grueling for you then, is that right? Or was
not
it
really, no.
What about the other ranks? Was it really tough for them? Or?
Well, they were crowded in, but the worst part of it was that the ship had been provisioned down in South Africa, and the ship stank of formaldehyde, the food preservatives.
What was the food like?
Well, we got through it. It only took us about 5 days to get across, fortunately.
The food wasn't all that great, I guess.
Oh, no. But then you can't complain in wartime.
You can't complain in wartime.
They only had two meals a day. All they could have. Didn't have time to get three meals in.
So I gather you got off in Europe and come down south of England on the train.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
That's right.
Did you have to Aldershot?
No, we went to Fairmile Common, actually. That's between Esher and Cobham on the Kingston Portsmouth Road.
And what facilities were waiting you there?
Well, they had Neeson huts, billets, and kitchen and that sort of thing.
Now, was this the 3rd Medium Regiment at this point? Or
yes. Mm-hmm.
Because you were a commissioned officer, were you assigned to that 3rd Medium Regiment before you left Canada? Mm-hmm. Or you were assigned before you left Canada?
Yep.
What were your initial duties when you reached overseas?
Well, I'd only just joined the regiment just before we went over. I had to get to know my troop, my officers and NCOs and the men. We had to get all our equipment issued over there, artillery, the guns and tractors and vehicles and everything else.
Are you using British guns and things at this point?
At the point, that point, yes, we had British 6-inch gun house, or howitzers. And we had to learn how to operate as an artillery regiment, or in my case, an artillery troop, and just train officers and men.
What's the type of training exercise that you used? I guess what I'm trying to get at is, how does it really differ? Because you're a mobile unit as opposed to a stationary, is the major difference or what?
Well, basically, yes. That's right. You have to get used to movement, moving men and equipment around, being in certain places, map references and so on at a certain time, by certain routes.
Well, how long would you be given to move?
It depends on the circumstances.
Circumstances.
Yeah.
Well, how many guns in your, how should I put this? I guess I'm trying to, if you can remember, trying to get a breakdown of how many guns men.
I was a troop commander when I went overseas, and I was in charge of an organization which maintained and operated and fought 4.55 guns, which had fired 100-pound shells. Now, each gun crew had, I think it was 10 men under a sergeant, a bombardier. Then in addition to that, there had to be a signal section to establish telephone communication where it was feasible and operate the radios. There was a troop commander's carrier crew, and there was a troop command post with two lieutenants and other technicians in it. And there were driver mix to look after them.
So it's not as if you just grab the gun and run. It's a fairly big operation.
No, there were 75 men in the troop looking after four guns.
75.
Something like that, yes. And there were two troops to a battery, plus battery headquarters staff as well. About 250, I'd say 250 men in the battery, and there are two batteries in the regiment, which has another regimental headquarters in addition.
Headquarters on top of that.
So there are about 750 men altogether in the medium regiment.
Well, what did you do during, now you got over in 42, you remember what month at all you were over?
June
42. What did you do from June 42 to June 44?
Well, we
trained.
We trained and complained about equipment which should be improved. Fortunately, in some cases, important cases, they listened to us and gave us better equipment. But we went off on firing practices, Wales, Yorkshire, waypoints, Salisbury Plain. And we had a tough time keeping the men from becoming overtrained, really, keeping their interest going.
And devising new things.
Right.
What was the entertainment and sports type of activities in England at that time? Were there?
No, there was the Naffy shows. There were the pubs were open, the theaters were open. Regimental sports officer put on sports for the men, either within the regiment or inter-regimental sports.
Yeah, the sports, you played soccer, that type of thing, basically.
Soccer and rugby. Anything that could be organized and
equipment,
yeah.
Not too much equipment.
That's right.
Very good. Now, your regiment didn't go over to Italy.
No.
Correct. How did the men feel about that? How did you feel about that?
Well, we felt that we were going to be in on the important push. Which
through Europe?
Through Europe, yeah, which we were.
So you didn't worry about not getting
no.
to Italy at all?
No.
I'm just wondering, it seems that 2 years of training, you know, during wartime seems an awful long time, you know, before you're into action. It's
well, that's
the
problem we had. We had a tough time keeping the men from getting overtrained, stale.
Was there any disciplinary problems at all because of this, do you figure? Or?
No, not really. If you knew how to handle the men, definitely not. I'd use your head and didn't make them do idiotic things without giving them a sensible reason. Like that's the secret of the whole thing.
That's very good. How did you prepare for the Normandy invasion? And what was, you know, your regiment's role prior to the invasion? Were you on the
the signal section was, yes.
Your signal section
mm-hmm.
was.
Creating that impression that was another army up there around
army, yeah.
the southeast coast under Patton.
That's right.
But just the signal sections were out on the signals exercise, really.
You sent your signals up there
mm-hmm.
and you guys still remained where you were.
Oh, yes, sure.
And when did you go over on Normandy? Do you recall at all?
We went over in the same ship or the same convoy as the 3rd Canadian Division. That's all I can tell you as far as timing is concerned.
You don't remember?
Towards the end of June.
So it was D plus quite a few days.
Yes.
You got over.
Yeah. They're just taking Carpathia.
How did you feel about the Normandy invasion? Quite optimistic.
Well, at the time we got over there, I was confident that we were there to stay.
Of no doubt in your mind about this?
No doubt about it in my mind at all, especially after I'd got there and saw what was there. And the fact that Jerry couldn't get over us with his planes. Very, very seldom. That was usually at the same time at night, about 10 o'clock, he'd come over and bomb us when we were on the outskirts of Khan. Right.
You mentioned now that you were in on the Phillies gap operation. I don't know how you call it, trying to close the gap off. And I said to you, there's been charges by Americans that the Canadians didn't progress quickly enough. The Canadians and the British hadn't progressed quickly enough. So I was wondering if you mind putting your response on tape.
Well, I feel that their criticism is not valid, and the fact that I've always understood that the Canadians had more Canadian and German divisions opposite them than either the British or the Americans. The British had nearly as many, but the Americans had half as many. And we had attracted the major German power in front of the Canadians specifically so that the Americans could make that left hook and close off the gap.
What was your duties at this point? What was the 3rd Canadian Regiment up to at this point during this rush to close the gap?
Supporting the 4th Armored Division.
Were you doing lobbing shells into the Germans or what?
No, I was directing fire when it's necessary, yes.
How much, I guess what I'm trying to get at is how often would you be, you know, I know it all depends on circumstances, but would you be harassing the enemy just to... if you had nothing else to do, would you start laying shells in there, or was it a planned specific operation before your guns went off?
Well, I was had gone ahead with the tank regiment, 2nd Armored Brigade, an independent brigade, as a foo. And when we were overlooking Falaise, the colonel pointed out a target of a German infantry regiment out in the open, retiring on foot at 8 o'clock in the morning. After confirming that it was the Germans, not our own men, using a whole regiment of guns, which are 16, I covered them with 5-round gunfire, 5 different ranges and bearings, airburst. And that is really, then there was another target requested by the infantry in Falaise itself, which they called on my support. Apart from that, it was divisional or army headquarters which laid on the artillery barrages that you're referring to, where it was necessary.
So you just set your guns and let them go to a specific...
barrage purposes or fire plan.
Very good. You were still a captain at this point overseas?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned that looking at the official history, which is Stacy's Victory Campaign, Volume 3, Canada's official history, dispute the business about Boulogne. You were not in Boulogne itself.
That's right. The 3rd Medium Regiment didn't get into action in that area until after Boulogne itself had been taken, but before Cape Grenay had been taken. I was the observation officer. I was told to go and fire up the backsides of the 4 cross-channel gun emplacements on Cape Grenay, and that Boulogne had been taken. I was using a water tower behind Cape Grenay, but in front of these Boulogne emplacements, and they took exception to my activities and fired 5 rounds over open sights out of 18-inch guns at me personally.
Well, how did they miss?
They were off for line. It was less than a mile away from me.
I guess you got out of there rather quickly.
Well, after the 5th round, yes.
Why weren't these guns captured beforehand?
Well, I didn't know.
Did you never find out?
No.
What you're You say it when you were at Cape Grenade that you're involved with this thousand-plate raid. There was a cooperation between the artillery and the Air Force. And I was wondering how you could describe that as best as possible.
Well, they had planned an infantry attack on Cape Grenade with the 16th Scottish, and I was supposed to go forward with them in my carrier after dark. But at the last minute, they canceled that. And they organized an air strike against the forts at Cape Grenade, which were very heavily defended. They were going to bring in 1,000 planes in 5 waves of 200 each wave at low altitude and bomb them. And my job was to register all the guns and the aircraft guns especially on the Cape with airburst, so that when these waves appeared I could fire a series of shoots, you might say, covering each of these guns airburst, so that they didn't have an opportunity to shooting our bombers up.
They were grabbing the ground themselves.
That's exactly what they did. They ran from the guns after when the third wave appeared. They ran from their AK-AK guns and they didn't fire any more at all, and we didn't lose one bomber.
There's a bomber on this raid at all.
But the same thing was attempted on a general larger scale when they were taking Calais a few days afterwards. It was all supposed to be fired, all the regiments were supposed to fire on a code word, which was never received, and we lost I don't know how many heavy bombers because the code word wasn't given.
No idea why the code word wasn't given at all, or any explanation?
I've never heard of an explanation of it.
There's not a bad feeling about that, is that correct?
I imagine there would be.
When you set off the shell burst now, would it be like a shrapnel type shell, or what kind of a shell would it be?
High explosive.
The high explosive
bursting in the air, about 8 feet above the ground.
So you can set it for to burst 8 feet above the ground.
That's right.
And would there be a lot of metal flying, or
exactly.
What was
the whole
special, but it's a special shrapnel type shell.
No, it's high explosive.
It's a high explosive shell.
Yeah.
It was to leave lots of metal flying.
That's right. We didn't have any shrapnel shells in this last war, that I know of.
I use the term for metal flying, it's an incorrect term.
No.
You're also saying that you had come into contact with this Polish division?